welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. And now, here's your host, John Hanson, with Greg Cosell.
Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. I am John Hanson. Today is Friday, June 19th, 2015. And this week marks the end of the offseason, essentially. So we're going to call this the offseason wrap-up podcast. The OTAs, their history, the mini camps, basically wrapping up this week. All the NFL teams will go on vacation, essentially, for about 5 weeks. So we over at FantasyGuru.com have obviously been covering everything throughout the offseason, starting with the coaching changes. The article is up on the website. All the free agency activity, that article is up on the website. The draft, and now this, the final step before we're ready for training camp. So we're ready to break it all down and offer up a mini training camp preview. We want to remind you first to subscribe to FantasyGuru.com, our 21st year. Just head to the website. There is a little flash movie that you can watch and see all the benefits and all the features. A lot of DFS content this year, beefing that up as well as all our usual great stuff. So check that out at FantasyGuru.com. Time now to bring in our guy, Mr. Greg Cosell, and we're going to go around the league with Greg. Greg, good morning.
John, how are you?
I'm well, sir. You ready for the summer?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, you know, and there's not a lot that goes on at these mini camps and OTAs. So, we'll do the best we can here.
This has got to be a good time for you though, Greg, because isn't July kind of a down month for, I'm sure you're busy, but it's gotta be a little bit of a respite for you, don't you think?
Well, it's not quite the season, but it's, you know, we call it here the non-season, not the off-season.
Yeah, gotcha. All right. Well, we've done a lot of work at FantasyGuru.com. We've essentially brought everyone right up to this point. But before we get ready for training camp, we wanted to kind of go around the league with you one more time and get some thoughts. And we're not going to cover every situation. We've done podcasts with you this year that have covered the rookie class, for example. We've reviewed the free agency and all that. But I personally, Greg, have some lingering thoughts and questions.
All right.
and positions that we've kind of taken that could change, but wanted to get your thoughts on those positions. So we'll start in the AFC.
I want you to be comfortable, John. You know, I don't want you to have any lingering doubts here, so I want you to be comfortable.
Absolutely. Very comfortable. No uneasiness, no lingering doubts. Everything we say on this podcast, Greg, is going to happen 100%. It's the NFL, so it's very predictable.
That's always the way it is. Everything we say absolutely happens.
It's so boring, you know, especially last year. Anyway, let's go over to the AFC East. And, you know, there is one player that I know you have liked what you've seen on film at times. Consistency is the problem, but you've seen a lot of NFL attributes, the good arm, the mobility, and that is Geno Smith, Greg. And I got to tell you, I'm feeling him a little bit this year in the fantasy world. Now, some of that is a function of he's basically a free pick in fantasy. People are not all over Geno Smith. We know what Chan Gailey can do for quarterbacks. I mean, let's be honest. Let's look at Ryan Fitzpatrick, how he helped him in Buffalo. Let's look at – we always bring up Tyler Thigpen. Just your general thoughts on Geno's opportunity in this offense with this weaponry. The offensive line isn't great, but I'd say maybe it's average. Obviously, you bring in Brandon Marshall. You're bringing a deep threat in Devin Smith. They're going to spread it out a little bit. You've got a couple of tight ends. You got Jeremy Curley now, Greg, who is finally cast as what he should be, a number three, a slot receiver. They gave him a contract last fall. It's kind of all here for Geno in what I would view a quarterback-friendly offense, Greg. Your thoughts on Geno Smith and the Jet offense?
Well, you know, I think with quarterbacks like Geno Smith, and this is not profound, John, but it's true, is the concerns you have are decision-making in those sort of critical situations and pressure moments. Because you can watch Geno Smith, and I've studied him a little more this summer, and you can see as we've said many times before, many of the attributes that you look for. It's the reason he's an NFL starter, and it's the reason people still on a certain level feel good about him, because you see certain things that are NFL traits. The issue with him is when, let's say, he's in the red zone and the design of the play doesn't work, and then he leaves the pocket and then he throws the ball up for grabs. I'm thinking of an interception he threw against the Bears last year, that kind of play. Those are the kinds of plays that the higher level quarterbacks, and again, I'm not putting Geno Smith in the top 10, but that the higher level quarterbacks don't make. So that's the concerns that we've seen with through 2 years with Geno. You've seen him make some big time NFL throws, and you've seen him make those kind of head scratching decisions that he has to remove from his game.
Do you view him as a good fit for what Chan Gailey normally does offensively?
Well, this is another thing we've talked about. I think coaches can help quarterbacks a lot as long as you're a normal down and distance. Then when you get into longer yardage situations where the defense has the tactical advantage and the game is quicker and more difficult for the quarterback, that you can't help him as much. And those are the situations that Geno Smith has to do a better job of commanding and executing. And you know, it's like any offense. Offenses can help, and I know this is fantasy, so you're talking numbers. Can Chan Gailey improve Geno's numbers? Yes. Can he ultimately make him a better quarterback? Those are two different things, and
yeah,
that
no
remains
question.
To be seen.
Yeah, and we only care about the fantasy.
Right, of course. Yeah. You know, I'll give you a very quick example, because I know we want to cover some ground. It's Mark Sanchez. The best numbers of his career last year in Chip Kelly's offense. But was Mark Sanchez a better quarterback? Probably not.
No. He made a couple of throws that should have been pick sixes and the like. He's
right.
Still Mark.
So the numbers are there. And then for fantasy, you know, people might think, hey, let's get Mark Sanchez and Chip Kelly's offense. He's going to throw for 320 every week and maybe a couple of touchdowns. And that's great for fantasy. But is he a better quarterback? So that's the same question. We're going to have to wait and see what the answer is with Geno Smith.
Yeah. And he will run a little bit for sure. And especially
without question.
And that will help for fantasy, no question about it. And then the weaponry there as well. So he's a fascinating guy. He's a top 10 guy to watch in the preseason, as far as I'm concerned. I truly believe he can be a top 20 guy for fantasy. You don't need to comment on that, Greg. We'll move on to Buffalo. And I spoke with someone who spoke. See, I have good connections, but I always I speak to someone who spoke to someone. But I spoke to someone who talked to an NFL scout who brought up an interesting point with LeSean McCoy. And this person had concerns. I don't want to come out of left field with this, but he had concerns with McCoy playing with a fullback. Now, I believe he did in at Pitt, but not so much in Philly.
Right.
Any thoughts on that? Because he is a little bit of a freelancer and a dancer.
Yep.
And, you know, that's another – could be another strike against McCoy running behind this subpar offensive line. Any thoughts there?
Well, you know, there's two parts of that. The first part is he's a certain kind of runner and he's a creative runner and you don't want to take his creativity. And normally if you add a fullback, you're defining the runs more. The second part of that is his creativity at times gets him in trouble and prevents an offense from staying on schedule. So what you want to do is try to define the runs better so that he stays on schedule. So there's two sides to that coin. There's no right answer. So you have to decide what that means. Now, initially, I would assume LeSean McCoy would have a little problem with it because he's not used to it. But who knows what happens down the road when he gets through a training camp? I mean, clearly, the Bills want to line up and play that way. And you know, you can run a lot of different ways. We know that, John. You know, you can run with a fullback. You can run at a three wide. You can run with two tight ends. They're not just going to do one thing.
Sure.
But clearly they're going to start with the run game, and having two back sets will be a part of it.
And he's not going to hit it downhill and get skinny consistently like a Frank Gore. So under
Greg
Roman.
But that's what they're probably trying. You know, Greg Roman is the offensive coordinator. And,
yeah,
you know, if they're going to run gap scheme runs, which are power, which are counter, those kinds of runs, you've got to hit those. And, you know, we can sit here and say, well, gee, that's not the kind of back McCoy is. But you know what? He'll be a better runner if he hits those.
Yeah,
so
he
they
will.
Know that, and they're trying to get him to enhance what he brings to the table creatively and then make him a better runner in structure.
And I understand everyone is enamored by the volume, and they're all talking about him getting the rock, and he will get it, but he'll be a top 15 pick this year in fantasy. I will not take LeSean McCoy. Let's move on to the Miami Dolphins. He is a player, Ryan Tannehill is, Greg, that I'm really honing in on, because what I do in the preseason is essentially I just look for mispriced players. An example of a right. mispriced player would be Andrew Luck. He was available 45, 50 picks into the draft this year. In some leagues, he'll go at 5. So last year he was mispriced. When I look at the quarterback landscape, I look at Ryan Tannehill as the next guy, the mispriced guy. Now, look, he's not perfect, and a lot of new weapons. Devontae Parker's foot issue was a little bit of a buzzkill. Hopefully he'll be ready. Looks like they're being proactive about that. But for what it's worth, in shorts, he was balling in the OTAs. They loved his wide catching radius and all that. But I know we've covered it, Greg, but Tannehill has just wrapped up a real strong preseason. Give us a feel for your confidence level in their ability to put up numbers. Now, I look at this offense, if we group Chip Kelly and Bill Lazor together, maybe it's unfair to do that, but if we do, we see 3 years in the NFL body of work-wise, and all three years the quarterbacks have produced, Greg, and I am very optimistic that Tannehill will continue to take a step forward and improve on his already solid numbers. Just general thoughts there on Tannehill.
I would agree with you. I think, as we've discussed, he's basically improved the way quarterbacks used to improve before we got this attitude that a guy had to be great week one as a rookie. So
exactly.
His improvement has been very incremental, but very solid. I guess last year he threw 27 touchdowns. They'll probably stay with a lot of the elements of that offense. Now for fantasy, now you're going to get the running game involved with Tannehill. There was a stretch last year in a 3 or 4 week period where I think he had more rushing yards than any quarterback in the league. Now, I don't think he's going to run like Russell Wilson for 800 plus yards or even a Kaepernick, but I think that will be a somewhat significant part of his fantasy element. Don't you agree?
Oh, 100%. 55 rushes, 317 yards, and a rushing touchdown, averaging almost 6 yards a carry.
I mean, he could get to 500 yards and score 4 rushing touchdowns, and that wouldn't, to me, be beyond the realm of possibility. But I think even as a passer, he'll get more and more comfortable in this offense. Don't forget, the reason the read option is effective is because of what it does to the defense. You don't have to run the ball with the quarterback in order for it to have an impact on the defense. It changes the way they play, and it presents opportunities for you in the passing game. So I would expect Tannehill's numbers to improve.
And I think they've really wisely added the type of weapons that fit his skill set, getting rid of Mike Wallace, getting more run after the catch guys. We love the addition of Jordan Cameron. Just fingers crossed he can stay on the field. One other player I wanted to touch on real quick. Now, as you know, Greg, because you're all over the fantasy lingo, PPR leagues, point per receptions. And you know, I thought about it all off season with Jarvis Landry. Oh, all these new weapons and Greg Jennings and Kenny Stills and Devonta Parker. But you know what? I'm still all in on Jarvis Landry. I love this kid. I think he's I think he's a quarterback's best friend. I think he's a hell of a football player. I think he's a good kid. I've heard great things. I know Zach Mettenberger told someone I know that, you know, he loves him. So you like Landry as well, Greg?
Love Landry. I think Landry is a big time slot receiver who'll just get better and better. And again, I think, you know, in that offense, he could catch 80 balls this year, and I think he's good run after catch. I mean, he's not going to average 17 or 18 yards per catch. That's not what I'm suggesting. But I think that he does have excellent run after catch skills. He's not necessarily tall, but he's solidly built, so I think he gives you that as well.
I thought he was a little more explosive than – look, he's not DeSean Jackson, but I thought he was a little more explosive than advertised last year. Did you pick up on that, or is that just me?
Well, Well, he's more short area equipped than long speed explosive. And when you work in the slot, that's what you're ultimately looking for.
Gotcha. And finally, Lamar Miller, it's a weird thing because he clearly the offense brought out the best in him. He was utilized well. They used him in short yardage. He's a bigger back, although he's adding some weight, which I never like, but they still seemingly put a cap on his touches. And again, Jay Ajayi, I'm enamored with him as a sleeper. I just look at Jay Ajayi, Greg, as a better inside thumper. And I think that's what they want in this offense. And I think that he has a really good chance to essentially have the no Sean Marino role that they had planned out last year. And that could be good for, hell, 175 carries this year, Greg.
Could be. I think what you'll see with this offense is they'll get a feel for how defenses are going to play them when they're in the gun. And if defenses spread out, you might see Miller in certain situations, because certainly Miller can hit the hole downhill and he can take it to the house more so than Ajayi. If defenses, and I don't want to say pack it in, because if you're in a three wide, defenses don't necessarily pack it in, but they'll get a feel for how defenses use sort of that extra safety, perhaps, or what they do with a linebacker. You know, are they going to cheat that guy inside closer to the box, or are they going to spread out? And I think that will determine the relative usage of Miller and Ajayi.
I don't really have anything on New England. That there's not a ton going on. Obviously, the Tom Brady situation is paramount, but no sense in really talking about that. The backfield is just an absolute disaster. But one guy I'll bring up real quick, because he's made some noise in the OTAs, was James White. Now, I don't know what his margin for error is, and we didn't see much from him, but we do know that Shane Vereen is gone. Now, they bring in Travaris Cadet, who could certainly fill that role, and Deion Lewis is still there. But James White, your thoughts on him potentially being the number two running back, maybe even the week one starter with LeGarrette Blount suspended. Is it simply a function of the kid did nothing, so there's nothing really to say with James White?
Well, as you know, in this offense, I mean, rarely do they have one guy who is the weekly feature back. I mean, we saw in years past Stephen Ridley gain 1,000 yards 1 year, but it's hard to gauge how they'll use their backs. I mean, last year you saw Jonas Gray against Indianapolis go for 199 or 200 yards, and you never saw him again. So it's really difficult to gauge usage with New England. And I'm sure you're feeling the same way, and that's why we're talking about him. Yeah, I don't have anything really profound to add here. I like James White's skills. He's not a great runner. He's a solid runner. He's a good pass receiver. He was an excellent blocker at Wisconsin, an excellent pass protector. So what that means role-wise with New England, very, very hard to say.
It's intriguing because you could, in theory, see him as a guy who gets 6, 7, 8 carries a game and 2, 3, 4 catches a game as well because of those receiving ability. One other thing real quick, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but do you now they did release Tim Wright.
I was surprised.
It would appear as if you just didn't pick up the offense. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right.
But do you look at their number two tight end situation and feel like they're looking to be athletic at that spot, thus the Tim Wright hire and the Fred Davis signing? And do you view Scott Chandler, and this is probably an impossible question, but do you view Scott Chandler as more of a Gronkowski backup handcuff, if you will, and they're looking to be more athletic at that number two tight end spot?
I don't know. Chandler was a pretty good tight end. Now, you wouldn't say he's a little more athletic than you think. He's, certainly not Jimmy Graham or Antonio Gates in his prime, but Chandler's not a big plotting guy. I think they have a very good tight end situation with Gronk and Chandler. And, look, we saw a team that used a lot of multiple tight end sets last year, and they matched their offense to their personnel. Again, New England is hard because they don't do one thing, and they do what fits their personnel and what fits the opponent that they're playing in any given week.
Over in
Chandler
the
will be to me, a meaningful part of this offense. What that means in number of catches, John, that's really hard to say, but he's not going to play 12 snaps a game. He's going to be a meaningful part of this offense.
I mean, the dude's like 6'6" plus, so he'll be a red zone threat at worst. AFC North, Baltimore Ravens. I had a chance to interview Steve Smith recently, and he flat out admitted that last year defenses were doubling him, tripling him, and that kind of slowed him down. Your thoughts on this offense this year, Mark Trestman, and they're going to be relying, Greg, big time on a couple of rookies and Breshad Perriman and Max Williams. I know you like both players, but in Perriman's case, your affinity for him, is that more projecting in 1 to 2 years, or do you have confidence in him right away? Because I don't think he caught more than 50 balls in his career, averaged 20 yards a catch. And then Max Williams, that's a tough go as a rookie to step in here with a complex offense. And I don't think his offense in college was anywhere near the complexity of this system. So there's going to be a steep learning curve for these two kids.
Yeah, Perriman is a fascinating case study because skill set wise, he can play now. What I don't know, and none of us do unless people tell you this, is how quickly he picks things up, his work ethic, all those other things that go into how quickly rookie receivers can transition to the league. Talent wise, he's ready to play now, but you know, we don't know the other things. The one thing we do know is Joe Flacco throws the ball. He's a pull-the-trigger quarterback. So if he gets man coverage, he's going to throw the ball to Breshad Perriman. So now it's up to Perriman. And that's a real hard thing to know until we see more. You're going to have to see some preseason with Perriman to get a better feel.
Look, Justin Forsett, we love him. We're all in on Forsett this year. It is the same offense. It's the same terminology. It's the same zone blocking scheme that made him a fantasy star last year, and it's Mark Trestman. So, enough said. I mean,
their offense will be good, and you know, and Flacco, who gets not a lot of love. I mean, he's a pretty talented quarterback.
Look, he had a career year in year one of an offense last year with Gary Kubiak. So he's no question. He's legit. Let's go to Cincinnati and. Mr. Hill, your thoughts on the proposition of working these two guys into the mix, Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. They found a real nice formula late in the season, but does Jeremy Hill simply command 2/3 of the touches? In other words, how good was Jeremy Hill last year? Any flaws in his game? I love the size, the ability to run against, you know, stacked boxes. The long speed is also nice. You can catch the ball. Any deficiencies in Jeremy Hill's game that you see?
I don't think so for the role he'll be asked, which essentially will be feature back. Look, John, we talk about this so often. You know, Andy Dalton's played 4 years. You know, we know what Andy Dalton is. They know what Andy Dalton is. Their offense is going to start with the run game, and it will be Jeremy Hill as the starting point. Now, they'll have packages for Gio Bernard. He's really gifted and explosive, so you don't want him to play 12 snaps. But he's not going to be their feature back. The offense won't run through Gio Bernard. It's likely to run through Jeremy Hill.
And let's not forget about Tyler Eifert, right, Greg? I know it's been a two-year train wreck, but this kid is really talented at tight end for Cincy.
Yeah, I always liked him. He essentially missed an entire year last year, but I thought he showed a lot as a rookie. I would think he'd be a big part of this offense, but when you miss an entire year, it's uncertain when a guy starts.
Cleveland Browns, hearing some good things about Johnny Football, believe it or not. Seemingly the rehab has done well for him, and he's taking football a lot more serious. The money sign is gone, Greg. That's big news.
Apparently.
Yeah.
You know, I think, John, you know, it's funny you mentioned Johnny Manziel, because I think he's going to play this year. Because, do you feel real comfortable with Josh McCown starting 16 games?
I feel a little bit more comfortable about that than, for example, Adam Kaplan starting 16 games.
You know? Well, you know, I think Manziel is going to get snaps. Now, whether that means he starts 3 games, 6 games, 8 games, that I can't answer. But I believe Johnny Manziel will play, and that will determine what his future is. If he comes in and plays and does not play well, then I think he's essentially going to be done in Cleveland, and we'll see what happens. But I think he's going to play meaningful snaps and meaningful games. I really believe that.
I totally agree. I think he'll get a chance to start half the season, 8 games for Johnny Football, maybe even a little bit more than that. We kind of were laughing in the office this week because the Browns receiving corps is kind of a joke, but when you look at it, it's like, you know what? It's actually better than last year. We'll see about guys like Rob Housler, and I know they're high on Taylor Gabriel, but really it's all about the running backs here, Greg, because this offensive line is outstanding. It's a top five line, most likely with Cam Irvin added here. And the running backs have been a disaster. It's a roller coaster ride in terms of Isaiah Crowell and Terrence West. Now, the latest I've heard is that West now has had a great offseason and Crowell not so much. So this a fluid situation, thus most likely the drafting of Duke Johnson. A lot of hype here for him in the OTAs, Greg. He's running around in shorts. But I know you like him, and give me your thoughts on Duke Johnson as a feature back, because I don't like the receiving ability much of a Terrence West and his Isaiah Crowell. Duke is clearly a better receiver. I know you think he's a good pass protector. What about Duke Johnson as the feature back in Cleveland?
I don't know if he can be that, John. You know, when you talk about feature back, I don't know if when all's said and done, Duke Johnson's going to have 280 carries. But right. I think that he'll be used significantly. I think that he's got excellent receiving ability, and because their wide receiving core is a question mark, I think he'll be used that way. You can split him out, and I think they'll do those kinds of things. So I think as far as lining up in the backfield in run personnel and run formations, that will happen, but that won't be his primary role.
Yeah, and certainly it's going to be something of a dual backfield with either Crowell or West as the
I think
banger.
They'd like West to be the guy, because West is much more of a pure inside between the tackles, move the chain, sustaining runner than Crowell. I think they'd yep. like West to be that guy. And again, this is what training camp will be for this year.
I know West is not as flashy as Crowell, but I still believe that overall he is a more complete feature type of runner than Crowell. I kind of view Crowell as a guy who should always be teamed with a guy like, well, Duke Johnson, quite frankly. But moving on.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. But, yeah, I think ultimately that Crowell is a powerful speed guy. But he's not yeah. necessarily a great, to me, inside runner. You know, West, I think, is much better navigating inside between the tackles.
Yeah, yeah. West, you know, he's got a little Emmitt Smith type. You know, he kind of looks like him a little bit to me. But Pittsburgh Steelers, they're loaded on offense. The offensive line is as good as it's been in quite some time. One guy, Greg, that you were high on this time last year, and you talked him up. We talked him up on the website. Now, he was a lost cause early in the season, but that's Martavis Bryant. Greg, as he tries to take over the starting job, and just give me the cliff notes on what you saw from him. I just thought that first and foremost, his ability to track down the deep ball, I thought was terrific. I mean, hell, his first catch in the NFL was a long touchdown, 6'4", yep. 211. And, you know, what's his upside, Martavis Bryant? Is he always going to be a guy who, you know, maxes out at like 50 catches for like 18 yards a catch? Or, you know, can Martavis Bryant at some point be a go-to guy maybe in 3-4 years?
Well, you know, he's built just like, let's say, AJ Green. So the question becomes, is that his upside? And that's hard to know. But he clearly has vertical speed. He has a lot to learn, I think, as far as running routes and those kinds of things. But and he plays right now, obviously, in a very multidimensional offense. So it's not likely he's going to catch 80 or 90 balls in this offense. But yeah. I think ability-wise, he has a chance to be really, really good. Now, is he going to be special? Boy, he's certainly got a skill set that could lead you to believe that could be the case. But from your perspective, from fantasy, I mean, I think he's the kind of guy that could catch 8 or 9 touchdowns. I wouldn't expect 85 catches.
Yeah, well, ironically, we have him for nine touchdowns with fewer than 60 grabs.
Right.
But and still very, very intriguing. You know, I'm still waiting for the kid Wheaton to make a play down the field. That was supposed to be his deal. I don't think I've seen it yet. But moving on to the AFC South, not much here in Houston. We all know it's going to be Arian Foster leading the way, likely Brian Hoyer. Do you have any explanation, though, because we all thought that this was going to be a tight end friendly offense, and you'd be hard pressed to find three teams that involve the tight end less than the Texans did last year. Do you have any explanation for that? And again, give us a reminder on CJ Fedorowicz, because that to me is the guy to bet on. Even though Garrett Graham is a veteran who's been around for a number of years. Fedorowicz, the light seemingly is starting to come on here in year two. Any thoughts on the tight ends here in Houston for Bill O'Brien?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to know. I like C.J. Fedorowicz, and I think that he has a chance, ability-wise, to be a very good player. You know, I don't know why that was not the case last year. He was a rookie. You know, Bill O'Brien's offense has a lot of elements to it. You know, people assume that an offense that doesn't spread it out and do all those kinds of things means it's easier. That's not necessarily true at all. So maybe there was a learning curve. I'm sure there was. I think he's pretty talented. I guess we're going to find out. It'll be a function, too, of who plays quarterback. That decision apparently has not been made yet. I've read that it's going to happen before training camp, but it hasn't been announced. So I don't know. I would think that the tight ends would be a much more significant part of what they do, but it was not the case last year.
In Jacksonville, I was told that they're very high on TJ Yeldon. Greg, that they view him as a three down back. I feel like you believe the same.
I do.
Any thoughts on him? And I guess it really all comes down to training camp and how Blake Bortles, his footwork and mechanics, because again, you felt like it kind of fell apart last year. They're working hard. He's working hard. Marquise Lee dealing with a knee. But also, we are very, very high on Allen Robinson. We're all in on Robinson. He's their starting X. He's their go-to guy. He's been very good. I'm optimistic overall, Greg. It's kind of a open-ended long question. I like the O-line in terms of what they've tried to do at the very least. AJ Cann, they brought in Parnell. Your thoughts here. I'm optimistic, finally, that the Jaguars are gonna make some noise here offensively.
Well, it's always easy to say it depends on the quarterback, because that's a fair statement, and it's true almost all the time. But I think a key part here that we must recognize, and you started with it, is it's for this team, they need to be able to run the ball.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they drafted Yeldon, and he's going to get the shot. He'll be the number one back, unless he plays himself out of that, but he'll be the number one back. And then you get with a young quarterback, like we discussed with Geno Smith, then you get to those critical situations from Bortles. You know, they can manage and control him and probably help his production, you know, with certain kinds of shot plays, with certain kinds of plays, as long as they're a normal down and distance. But then it comes down to, you know, the 6 or 7 or 8 times in a game where it's 3rd and 8 plus, and then you have to move the chains. And then your quarterback has to function and execute. And that's where it'll come down to with Bortles. But I think that they'll run the ball. Last year, they couldn't run it at all, John. I mean, you know that.
Yeah,
they couldn't run
none.
It at all. I mean, it wasn't just a bad run game. It was a non-existent run game.
Yeah, that's a great point. It really should start with a foundation running attack to kind of hang your hat on, and then take it from there with Bortles, with his skills and solid weapons, and Julius Thomas added as well. So,
yeah,
but again,
that's an important weapon too.
Oh yeah. He'll be moved all over the place, Greg. And
he
can line up anywhere and gives them a lot more versatility. And look, Mercedes Lewis, let's just call him a glorified right tackle. I'm fine with it. Tennessee, Marcus Mariota, off to a good start, Greg. How much of what does that mean to you? Anything at all that he's off to a good start in shorts?
Well, and also, you know, I mean, I've heard from people down there that he's done a lot of good things. They've seen some anticipation, which is a real positive. Again, it's always hard to know, but he's obviously the starting quarterback. Beyond that, you don't know. You don't know. But look, you know how it works, John. Unless a guy's terrible in OTAs, pretty much every team tells you that everybody looks good. So yeah. So that's hard to know. Rookie quarterbacks, you've got to see them play in games, and that starts with the preseason, and we'll find that out. But we know Mariota's the starting quarterback.
We still kind of think that they're going to be all about running the football as well, and they did release Sean Green. I saw Ken Wisenhunt yesterday say that Bishop Sankey is still his starting running back, but we're of the opinion, Greg, I'm pretty sure you agree, that David Cobb is a better – I kind of look at this backfield and would prefer David Cobb to be the first and second down back with Sankey, the changeup, and the third down back.
Well, here's the – the issue you face. You have a rookie quarterback, okay? And we know that Mariota is a hardworking kid, and we know he's smart. But still, how many packages are you going to give a rookie quarterback? And how many packages can you expect him to execute at a high level? So when you start with what you're talking about with, okay, Sankey's the back, but now it's Cobb, that remains to be seen because the quarterback has to execute all this too. And we don't know the answer to that question. They're going to tell you it's great and he's picking things up, and he may well be. But until the games start and you get totally different defensive looks and all the things start happening, you don't know the answer to that question.
I don't have much on the Colts. Andrew Luck is good. We like Frank Gore still. No slowdown in his game. Andre Johnson has slowed a bit, but he'll still get volume throws as much as he can get in this offense with only one football, but not a ton here. So we'll move on over to the AFC West, and we'll talk Denver Broncos. And CJ Anderson has dropped a little bit of weight. Monty Ball is kind of lurking. I believe I asked you who you'd prefer in a Kubiak offense. I believe you still said Ball, not sure about that, but let me ask you again, who would you prefer as the quote-unquote feature runner in Kubiak's offense, C.J. Anderson or Monty Ball?
Well, you know, it's always what have you done for me lately, and in our mind's eye, we see C.J. Anderson, and he played very well down the stretch. I remember, and again, I'm the one who's always told you college and the NFL are totally different, and they are, but I remember seeing Monty Ball in his last year at Wisconsin when I evaluated him for the draft, and I thought Monty Ball was a very talented runner. And I, you know, unless his skill set has changed or due to injury or due to other factors, I still think Monty Ball is a really talented running back, and perhaps more so than C.J. Anderson. Now, we see backs in the league who are maybe not as talented as other backs perform well. So that's a hard question to answer, John, but I think Monty Ball in a zone scheme is a talented, talented runner. So I think that's going to play out in training camp.
I almost feel like Ball is a little bit better of a fit for this zone scheme than Anderson. I see Anderson as more laterally elusive, but not that he can't do it, but you know, bottom line is Monty Ball is not dead to me, and I think if you draft C.J. Anderson, you should get Monty Ball. Your thoughts on the offensive line issues here? We've got three or four new starters here, Greg, and how disruptive is this going to be for Peyton Manning? And you would think they'd be a little bit more inclined to run the football given these offensive line issues. Now you've got the kid Chris Clark, who did some good things last year, and you know, it's not a lost cause, but I look inside here, Greg. I'm not feeling too good about this offensive line in Denver.
Yeah, and I think their offense is going to be different because I think all the things that Manning is used to doing requires an offensive line that's in tune, that takes time. I think you're going to see, I don't want to say a more simplistic offense, but I think you're going to see a run-based offense. At this point, look, you never want to underestimate Peyton Manning, but I don't think their offense is going to be built on Manning sort of running the show and throwing the ball as much as he used to. Now, I'm not suggesting he's going to be a robot now. That won't happen. But I think their offense will be different, and it will start with the run game much more so. You might see Manning under center quite a bit more.
Yeah, well, he can do it all. He's certainly been under center plenty, so that shouldn't be a problem. But yeah, we're dialing back the expectations, no question about it. But we don't think he's done. We simply think that he was injured last year, and that's why they ran the ball a lot.
Well, his numbers might be different this year. You might see him still be a terrific quarterback, but you might not see 45 touchdown passes. You know, in that offense, you might see him throw 28 touchdown passes. It's going to be a different offense.
He's had great, great years in his prime in which he's thrown only 28 touchdown passes.
Now, correct.
Granted, the game's changed a little bit, but 28 touchdown passes does not mean,
you know,
even in 2015 that you're done.
You know, it's funny because there were even plays last year where you saw the stretch run action and the play action pass game off of that. And, you know, which reminded me of when he was in Indianapolis with Edgerrin James. And I think you're going to see more of that in Denver this year with Kubiak off that zone stretch run action and play action. I think the pass game will feature more of that than Manning just in the gun.
In Oakland, it all looks pretty good on paper. They don't play the games on paper, and they're still a work in progress. But you got to be somewhat optimistic, at least I am, for Derek Carr, who certainly looked like he belonged as a starting quarterback in the NFL last year. You add a number one now, a go-to guy, which was missing last year, and that's a quarterback's best friend, Amari Cooper, who's been legit in the offseason. Crabtree's not a bad ex-receiver there on the outside. You bring in the tight end, Clive Wofford, and that's a good situation. The O-line, Greg, not too shabby, really.
No.
I mean, Khalif Barnes is still there somehow, but, you know, Rodney Hudson, they like a lot. And, again, I know I've asked you that he's going to be one of my guys. You know how I have, like, these 5-6 players who I annoyingly ask you about every week? Well, one of them will be Latavius Murray because I just – If he's healthy, Greg, I just can't see him fail it. He's too big and powerful. He'll get 4 yards almost every time he touches it, and he's got the home run speed. Probably a year away, this offense overall, but your thoughts on the Raider offense? I'm optimistic.
You would think. You know, I think Carr will improve. I think the big thing with Carr, and they'll try to help him and define it, but they'll want him to get the ball down the field a little more. Look, last year his interceptions were very, very low. He, for a rookie quarterback, he checked the ball down an awful lot. Whether he was uncomfortable throwing it down the field or didn't get a clear picture, only he could tell you that. But you know, it's always easy to say that they didn't have a good receiving core, and sure they didn't, but Derek Carr, to me, you were talking about, we started with Geno Smith. I think Derek Carr is also a fascinating player to watch this year and to see what his development will be.
Hey, I think you did it first. We threw out the Aaron Rodgers comparison, and I said that on TV. People thought I was going to get fired. But James
Jones. Well, just the way he snaps off throws. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
James Jones and calls him baby A-Rod.
Right. And it's the way he can snap off throws, and he's got a strong arm. He's got all the tools. The question is now the pace of development.
A lot to work with physically for Derek Carr, and now a lot to work with receiving-wise, supporting cast-wise. So that makes him fascinating. I don't have much on Kansas City, so we'll skip them and the Chargers. Didn't really do all that much offensively other than Melvin Gordon. And let me get another thought from you or two on Gordon. And look, he played at Wisconsin and he ran through some huge holes. Might he get them this year in San Diego? Because this O-line is all of a sudden pretty big.
You know, the one thing you can say about Gordon, and now this will become very interesting with San Diego, because in the last number of years, they've had Rivers in the gun an awful lot. Now, Melvin Gordon at Wisconsin lined up in single back and two back sets with the quarterback under center. He ran NFL style runs, gap scheme, power counter, zone. He's done everything. Will San Diego put Rivers under center and work through Melvin Gordon? That, to me, is the question that we won't have answered until they start, you know, we start seeing training camp. But that's how will their offense start? What will be the foundation? Is it still Rivers in the gun, or are they going to put Rivers under center more and work through Melvin Gordon?
Let's go to the NFC. We're listening to the FantasyGuru.com podcast, our off-season wrap-up podcast, along with Greg Cosell. I'm John Hansen. Follow Greg on Twitter, by the way, at Greg Cosell. I'm Fantasy underscore Guru. And follow the FantasyGuru.com Twitter account, at FantasyGuruSite. And, of course, check out the website. In Dallas, Darren McFadden was missing some time with a hamstring. It's shocking. I fell off my chair when I read that. You know, I went back and I looked at Joseph Randall. And I was very impressed. Now, maybe it was against a worn-down defense. And I know, look, he doesn't bring the velocity, as you like to say, that a DeMarco Murray does. No question. But dare I say, he's got a little more Zuzu than Murray. He's got the receiving ability. I know he's kind of a bonehead, and that's a concern, but I'm fascinated to see what Joseph Randall can do here, Greg. Do you share the same interest?
Well, the big question, there's a couple of questions with Dallas. The question is, can you have a foundation run game, a true foundation run game like they had last year with a backfield by committee?
Yeah.
And number two, can backs who have ability, like Joseph Randall, can they be true foundation backs who carry the ball 300-plus times? You know, there's a lot of guys, backs with ability, as we know, John, but they can't be foundation backs for any number of reasons because it's really hard to carry the ball, let's say 280-plus times, because there's a mindset and mentality that goes with that. There's a physical and mental toughness. There's a lot of things that go with that beyond just, you know, Zuzu and Flash and those kinds of things. So those are two big questions that Dallas needs to answer and won't be able to answer until the season starts.
Yeah, I sense it'll be a little up and down. I think Randall
will
be a guy, you know, he'll go on like a six-game stretch, and then something will happen. He'll steal some underwear or get hurt. So I don't think it's going to be an unbelievable breakout season for him, but I am fascinated still and intrigued by his talent because I hated him this time last year. I thought he was terrible. And I was going, and people said, oh, you flip-flop. No, I didn't flip-flop. In 2013, he sucked. And then he was a lot better last year, so I changed my opinion. But moving on to Philadelphia, I don't have a ton here, and we don't want to get into the whole Bradford thing. It's just too early to tell. I hate to say it, but I will say this, though, just as an FYI, just as a personal observation. I feel, Greg, if Bradford has any problems in camp with the knee, if it's still bothering him, to me that kind of opens up a full-fledged competition with Mark Sanchez. Do you agree with that statement? I think a healthy Bradford is the guy unquestionably, but any signs of trouble, I think that opens the door for Sanchez.
Oh, I agree. I mean, look, if Bradford can't play because of injury, yes. But I think if Bradford's healthy, then it's not even a question because, you know, one guy's far more talented than the other guy. Right. You know, it's... You know, this whole offense to me is really fascinating because I've talked to people who have studied, you know, Chip Kelly's offense, who played against him in college and had to study him, and they almost always mention that the first two things are speed and read option. And obviously, he's not going to have read option, and he hasn't really had it in the NFL. So it's really a fascinating dynamic.
Nelson Aguilar is lighting it up, Greg, and this kid really is impressive. Do you think there's a chance that we don't see any drop-off from Jeremy Maclin? I know that's a lot to ask, but does he have a chance to be as productive, maybe in a different way, maybe a little more run after the catch than the ball traveling in the air, although Bradford can deliver it. Any chance that this kid is represents a negligible drop-off from Jeremy Maclin?
You know, again, he's a rookie, and of course it's training camp, and you know, so of course he's great. I mean, it's OTA, so of course he's great. You know, that's hard to know. I mean, look, he's going to get the opportunity. He seems like a really smart kid. You know, there were elements of Chip Kelly's offense and what USC did in his last year, you know, when Sarkisian, the head coach last year, started to do more spread stuff, so he has some experience with it. Again, those he's going to play. You know, they're going to put up numbers, and that's what you're concerned about in fantasy. Is he going to match Macklin? What was Macklin like, 85 for 1,300 last year and over 10 touchdowns? Is Aguilar going to do that?
No,
boy,
that's a lot.
I'd be hard pressed to say yes, he'll do that.
Yeah, I have him for about 75. Seven or eight touchdowns, 1,100 yards, something like that, which does fall short. Real quick on DeMarco Murray. Does the fact that he's moved on to a different scheme concern you at all? And also the interior of the Eagle offensive line is a concern. Just a general thought on the transition of a DeMarco Murray from that great situation. Does that concern you at all for DeMarco in Philly?
Well, I was told by Jason Peters that their offensive line is better than Dallas's.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, let me go bump him up on my rankings now, Greg.
So, you know, I'm going to be really interested to see what Chip Kelly does, because Chip Kelly will play to talent as well, I think. You know, is it possible that they put Bradford under center more? You know, there were times Nick Foles was under center. Is everything still going to be the same shotgun? It's hard to know. They're going to play fast. That we know. He's not going to all of a sudden start huddling up. But could he try to incorporate more runs that you feel better about with DeMarco Murray? Or is he just plugging DeMarco Murray in? And the second question is, how much is DeMarco Murray playing? They've got Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles. Yeah. We've heard Chip Kelly numerous times express his love for Darren Sproles. You know, yeah. I don't have a good feel right now for the play breakdown of those three backs. I really don't. I don't know if you feel you do. DeMarco Murray, to me, is not carrying the ball 320 times. I don't believe that's going to happen.
Well, my theory is that it's going to be a series situation. So Murray gets two series, Matthews gets one series. And also, and we talked about this in the office, I don't know if they pull Matthews on third down and goal line situations like they used to in San Diego, because if it's his series and they're running off all these plays,
right,
it's his series and he can catch the football. And he's had some fumbling problems on top of the goal, but he can do everything that Murray can do. So I kind of view him as a mini Murray in terms of the role. So I think
right.
He gets, you know, like half of Murray's role, basically.
Well, you know, Matthews is a pretty good back when healthy, and he's probably better than pretty good. So I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I don't feel comfortable. You know, Murray is the big marquee name because of what he did last year, and deservedly so. It was an unbelievably great year. I just don't think that's going to happen in Philly, but I could be wrong.
Well, look, if you're looking at the two players in terms of fantasy, who's the better value? It's unquestionably Matthews, because Murray is going to command a top 15 pick most likely. And Ryan Matthews, and that's early second round pick. Ryan Matthews, you can get him in the ninth round or the 10th round. And he's going to get, if he's healthy, he's going to get 150 plus touches. That's a lock.
Right.
And that's
right.
So, all right, the New York Giants, not a ton here, but we are intrigued by the encouraging news of Victor Cruz and just kind of now the Will Beatty injury is a buzzkill. That's a problem. There's no question about it. At least they drafted Eric Flowers, who presumably is going to play left tackle until Beatty's ready. But And of course, Jeff Schwartz is healthier. But when you really just lay it all out here and you look at the best case scenario, a decent enough offensive line, Jennings, can he stay healthy? I doubt it. But you've got an explosive receiving specialist now in the mix, and you've got Victor Cruz now presumably healthy enough to be an effective player alongside Beckham, with Reuben Randall still in the mix, and Larry Donnell a year older and wiser. I know he was in a boot a couple of weeks ago, but this offense really does look good on paper, Greg.
You know, and the other thing to keep in mind, John, is over the last six games last season, as Eli got much more comfortable with that offense, he threw 12 touchdowns and three picks in the last six games.
Completing almost 70% of his passes, yeah.
Correct. So I would expect this offense to be pretty good. I think they'll be better and better under McAdoo. And I think this is going to be a pretty good offense. And it might be a very under-the-radar offense early in the season.
Washington Redskins seem to be evolving a little bit into more power running, if you will, and maybe a less reliance on Alfred Morris. But RG3 has made some noise in terms of having a decent end of the OTAs and all that. But, you know, I can't recall a quarterback with a bigger disconnect, because we, for a long, long time over at fantasyguru.com, Greg, have utilized a correlation between completion percentage and yards per attempt. We first noticed this with Tony Romo a decade ago after he had that half a season. And we looked back at quarterbacks who had completed at least 7.5 yards per attempt and over 65% of their passes in their first, whatever, 10 games. Right. And the list of guys who did it was like a Hall of Fame who's who. It was like Elway, Montana, Steve Young, and somebody else. And we're like, okay, Tony Romo's good, and he was. But RG3, I've never seen a disconnect. Completed 68.7% of his passes for 7.9 YPA, yet he was terrible. But you thought that at least at the end of the season – he showed some signs of progress, which I think is notable because he should be more comfortable this year and healthier. Can RG3 actually have a successful 2015?
Well, he showed some signs of life last year toward the end of the season. Again, what they're trying to do is teach him almost on a certain level, and the same thing's probably happening to some degree with Colin Kaepernick. They're trying to reinvent him to some degree as an NFL quarterback. You know, it's that whole debate we always hear about, John, about mobile quarterbacks, and you have to have mobility now to play in the NFL. But yet everybody still recognizes that the game starts in the pocket for the quarterback. And if the quarterback can't execute with some level of efficiency from the pocket, then the outside the pocket plays are just sort of once in a while things. And they're trying to reinvent RG3 to get him almost to change his DNA a little bit and get him to be an efficient pocket player. And as I said, they're working that way with Colin Kaepernick as well. You try to reinvent these guys because they're quick to leave. And we don't know the answer to that yet. You know, did he show some signs last year, RG3? Yes. But now you're talking about doing that consistently week after week.
Because at times to me, he looked like he wasn't even attending the team meetings, which I know he was. So that to me is just a comfort level that he was not at, and maybe he'll be a little closer to it this year. NFC North, I don't really have much on the Chicago Bears, so we'll move on to the Detroit Lions, and I think we've talked about this a lot. I view Eric Ebron as the biggest key for this offense to take the next step in year two of Joe Lombardi's offense, but we're already getting some strong hype on Amir Abdullah. So give us your cliff notes on Abdullah. Joik Bell is clearly on his way out, but can Amir Abdullah supplant him as the feature back?
Yeah, and I think because this offense with Joe Lombardi, and he came from New Orleans, does not Feature back is a different term in this offense. I don't think this is an offense that's going to line up on a consistent basis. Obviously, it's an offense that does everything, but this is not an offense that's built on lining up with power running. So I think in this kind of offense, I would argue that Abdullah probably could be your number one back because you don't need to carry 320 times in this offense. That's not the way it works. I think Abdullah could carry 230 times in this offense, and I think he could be really, really effective. So, you know, yes, I would answer that Abdullah could be that guy within the context of this offense.
Matt Stafford is kind of polarizing at this point. Some guys in our office, Joe Dolan in particular, give him a shout out. I think he's kind of a rich man's Jay Cutler at this point. I'm not there yet. I'm it's a tough call. I'm trying to wait and see on it. Again, to me, it's all Ebron, but you could argue, Greg, that the offensive line was not nearly as effective last year and a lot of injuries, that he got nothing from Ebron, and Calvin was banged up. So you could argue that if in year two, and look, he's got a stable of pass-catching backs, in year two with an upgraded offensive line, if Calvin's on the field with Golden Tate in year two, and they've got some fairly interesting guys at the third receiver spot, and one of them being Lance Moore, who knows the offense. And if Ebron takes that next step forward and supposedly the light bulbs come on here in the OTAs, but you could really argue that there's a lot of room for improvement for Stafford in year two of this system.
You certainly could. And again, with Stafford, you made the Cutler comparison, and I think that Stafford has some similarities with Cutler in the sense that there's often too often some forced throws, some off-balance throws. You know, you're talking about a really talented guy. I've looked at Stafford again this offseason as well. And you know, you walk a fine line because he makes throws that other quarterbacks don't even attempt. And then you get into the, you know, what's the balance between throws and completions that other quarterbacks don't even attempt versus the occasional pick that you scratch your head because he either forces it or he throws off balance. It's hard to really know exactly what the balance there is.
Brett Favre kind of found that, Greg.
Yeah, you know, it's always easy to say, well, we don't want to turn the ball over. And no one wants to turn the ball over, John. You know, we know that. That's not a profound statement. But, you know, when you call a play as a play caller and the play is there and the quarterback doesn't pull the trigger and misses an opportunity for an explosive play and then he checks it down for 4 yards, yes, he didn't turn it over, but you had an opportunity. You know, Stafford will take those opportunities and he'll hit those opportunities. So you walk a very fine line with quarterbacks that have superior arm talent and have the mentality to turn it loose. You know, obviously you'd like to cut down on those few, whether they're 5, whether they're 10, whether they're 15, whatever the number is, you'd like to cut down on those sort of forced throws. But it's a very difficult balance. When all said and done, who would you rather have, Matthew Stafford or Alex Smith?
I'd go Stafford, but I'm a fantasy guy. I would go for the upside.
Right, you know, but that's sort of the debate, you know, because Alex Smith will not turn it over. But Alex Smith had the fewest attempts of 20-plus yards last year and the fewest completions of 20-plus yards. You know, so you have to decide, what would you rather have? And I'm not saying there's an easy answer to that. I'm just saying that that's the, you know, those two quarterbacks would sort of, you know, be the two you might look at if you want to have that debate.
Let's move on. Green Bay, we don't need to say much. Aaron Rodgers, good.
He's Eddie good, Mason, too.
Good. Jordy Nelson, good. Randall Cobb, very good. I am intrigued by Richard Rodgers. Offensive line's fantastic. But Minnesota is just fascinating on so many levels. And you had said last year that Norv had changed his offense a little bit. So kind of pull back from the memory bank and give me a couple examples if you could, and will he revert to old form now that Adrian Peterson is back, or do you think that he'll continue to cater the offense a little bit more toward Teddy Bridgewater's skill set?
Well, I think he it's not that he pulled back. I think that he played to what Bridgewater was as a rookie. And there were certain throws that he didn't feel comfortable asking Teddy to make as a rookie that are sort of Norv throws, those deeper drops and those deep digs off play action. You know, it's not that I don't think Teddy can make those throws. I think he probably can if they're well defined. You know, and now that Peterson is back and you're probably looking at, you know, at an offense that starts with a run. Keep in mind, Norv Turner has always had an offense that, if you're reducing it to the Cliff Notes version, starts with power run and then throws the ball at the intermediate and deeper levels. That's been the Norv Turner offense. I think Bridgewater can probably execute some of that. And I think you'll see more of it this year as Teddy Bridgewater gets more and more comfortable. Is he a big-time arm talent? No, he's not. He's not ever likely to be. But I think there's a lot of things about Teddy Bridgewater that are very, very positive. And with a theoretical big-time run game now, I think that Teddy Bridgewater can improve pretty significantly this year.
Typically, Norv's passing attack features a big outside X receiver, and that's kind of the staple in the passing attack, you know, Michael Irvin and Vincent Jackson and Josh Gordon. But I was told that Mike Wallace is basically going to be the number one receiver. And I wonder if that's a little bit of a function of the evolution of this offense with Teddy Bridgewater. And your thoughts on Wallace as the move guy? Look, the verticality in the offense is a good fit with Wallace. Teddy threw a pretty good deep ball last year, at least better than Ryan Tannehill. I know Wallace is a pain in the ass. A lot of people hate him, Greg. I like him. I liked him last year for fantasy. I ranked him at 21 at wide receiver. He finished at 21. Now, granted, it got lucky because I didn't think he'd score 10 touchdowns. I don't think he'll be a big catch guy, Greg, but I believe that the Vikings have been looking for a consistent vertical threat to pair with Adrian Peterson for 7 years, and they've tried it with Bernard Berrien, guys like that. I like Wallace this year in this offense. Any thoughts on Mike Wallace?
Yeah, that's a wait and see for me, because I see Wallace more like an Alvin Harper in Norv Turner's offense than a Michael Irvin. I don't know if Wallace can fill that kind of role. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me based on what he did in the last half of last year. And I'm not suggesting Charles Johnson is Michael Irvin, but Charles Johnson is 6'2", 215. And I thought they really like him. And I thought he played really well last year in the last 6-7 games. And I think he fills that kind of role in Norv Turner's offense more than Mike Wallace does.
I agree. But I think that Wallace, in their mind, commands the ball a little bit more than a Charles Johnson. So we'll see.
Maybe, maybe not. We'll see on that.
Yeah. And look, say what you want about Wallace, and maybe you disagree, but the guy gets open. And he's I watch him play, and to me, he's consistently running away from people. And I like that. So moving on. Where the hell are we? The NFC North. We did Green Bay, Minnesota. All right, so we're now to the South. And this is going to be a big-time position battle in the world of fantasy with the two running backs here. And correct me if I'm – well, you know, refresh my memory, if you will. Now, the offensive line is a very good no, but that system seems to always get a higher level of play out of an offensive line. But – straight up, which back do you think is better for a straight, pure zone scheme, Freeman or Tevin Coleman?
Oh, that's a tough question. I didn't see Coleman at Indiana as a pure zone runner. I saw him more as a gap scheme runner. Others disagree with me, and they may be right, but that's not what I saw. I think he's much more of a downhill, explosive home run hitter as opposed to a shifty, you know, sort of patient vision, then stick his foot in the ground. I didn't see Tevin Coleman as that guy. So I guess my answer to that would be Freeman.
Okay. So, and I think right now in the fantasy world, for those drafting in July, if you're that crazy about fantasy and you can't help yourself, Devonta Freeman is a terrific value right now. You can get him in the 9th or 10th round. And I'm ready personally, not that it means anything at all, to just literally hand him at least 40% of this backfield right now. Straight up, it's his.
Right.
because, you know, and some room to grow from there. And people are not giving him any love whatsoever in the world of fantasy. Moving on here, not much else going on there. Although, do you like the kid, Justin Hardy? Because I feel like he's going to catch 60 balls. Yeah, 60 balls this year. I think he's a reliable possession type receiver.
I like him a lot. I really liked watching him at East Carolina. I thought that he was a terrific slot transition, slot projection to the NFL. I thought he had a real good feel for working inside and getting open, very good short area quickness. I think in that role, that's what he is. If you understand that's what he is, I think he can do that.
In Carolina, look, I kind of like it. They're it's very easy to figure out what the hell they're doing. They're going to run the ball with Jonathan Stewart, hope he stays healthy, and they're going to throw to these two big receivers, Devin Funchess doing a pretty good job thus far. It's early. A little Jericho Cotchery, veteran leadership out of the slot. Maybe once in a while you take a deep shot to Corey Brown or Teddy Ginn. Cam is Cam. He's going to be erratic, but he's been productive, and there you go. I feel as good about the Panther offense, Greg, as, dare I say, I've ever felt. Maybe with the exception of going into Cam's second season. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think they're going to run the offense they ran at the end of the year, John, when they got back into it and ended up winning the division at 7-8-1. They're going to put Cam's going to be, his running will be a featured part of it. They're going to do all the option stuff, read option, triple option, quarterback power. They're going to try to dictate that the defense bring an ace defender down in the box to play the run game because of the quarterback running the ball. You need a defender for him, and then you get one-on-one on the outside with big receivers. And then Cam throws it up to big receivers, and then they'll take their shots here and there, and that's where Corey Brown and Ted Ginn come into play. I think their offense is pretty well defined.
New Orleans Saints, that offense not as defined as I guess we're used to, although Sean Payton continues to say in the offseason, look, yeah, we're trending more to being a running team, but I'm still enamored with the forward pass, and Drew Brees is still a guy who's going to throw it. He's probably going to approach 600, which is a low number for him. But do you think that the upgrades on the offensive line, does that satisfy some of the drop-off that you noticed with Breeze last year? The fact that they got Max Unger now at center.
Right.
They drafted Pete in the first round. They've reinforced the line. I'm not saying it's a great line, but I think it's above average at worst.
They addressed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they addressed it. So, I think that we saw last year a significant stretch where their run game with Mark Ingram, who they re-signed, which I thought was an important re-signing. Obviously, they let Graham go. So I don't think this offense will be reinvented. I don't think all of a sudden you're going to see, Ingram with 380 carries. But I think there will be games where the run game is really important, and I think they'll probably focus on that a little more. And I think they'll try, I don't want to say manage Drew Brees. He's not that kind of quarterback. He's obviously as smart as there is, and he has a lot of control himself. But I don't think, he might not throw the ball quite as much.
Right. But I still think he's going to throw it 575 plus. I mean, this is not going to
I would agree.
Russell Wilson all of a sudden. And your thoughts your thoughts on Spiller and Peyton's ability to get him in space. That's really what it all comes down to.
In some ways, is Spiller a different version for this offense of Jimmy Graham? Is just the guy who you move around. I mean, obviously, two different style players, but
yeah.
Can they relatively be used the same way? A lot of movement. Obviously, Spiller can line up in the backfield. Graham, is not going to run the ball out of the backfield. But, I think that Spiller, in some ways, becomes that guy in their offense.
Yeah, and they're not going to have that Jimmy Graham role for a tight end, by the way. Everyone looking at Josh Hill as, oh, it's Jimmy Graham. No, it's a different role for
Josh Hill.
Well,
that's how I think Spiller is going to fill that kind of role just differently, but I think conceptually it'll be very similar. Yeah.
And finally, I personally think Marcus Colson is a real steal in fantasy drafts. They're burying him. And I understand he's on the back nine of his career and all that, but the chemistry that he's had with Breeze is hard to match in the NFL. They've been together so long and Jimmy Graham's gone. Marcus Colson will score 10 touchdowns this year. I guarantee that, just as an aside. Moving on to Tampa Bay. Not much here that we didn't cover previously. You know, Doug Martin's in pretty good shape, and we'll see how this backfield battle progresses here. I know that they'd like Charles Sims to be the guy. They also bring back Timmy Wright. I don't think we need to spend any time on it because we covered it with the draft stuff. So we'll move on to the AFC West, and we'll talk Arizona. And first and foremost, Greg, how impressed are you with this offensive line? I was told by Darren Urban, who covers the club, longtime beat writer for the Cardinals official website, that Jonathan Cooper is finally healthy, finally ready to contribute. So this offensive line, Greg, I kind of think it's like a top seven line in the league right now.
Well, this team has a fair amount of talent on offense, and Carson Palmer apparently, you know, went through pretty much everything at the OTAs, which is amazing. You know, a lot of people forget he's 13-2 in his last 15 games as a starter out there, with very good overall numbers. He's a professional quarterback. I think he's better than probably people think about him. You know, this offense. And Bruce Arians offense there, it's an explosive based offense. So I would expect this offense, you know, if Palmer stays healthy, to put up pretty good numbers all across the board.
Well, we loved Palmer last year. I loved him. We ranked him at like 14. He was like the top backup quarterback that we liked in terms of the value. And look, he was good for 20 points in fantasy every game he finished. 20 points, yep. A solid number. It's a real solid number. John Brown continues to ascend. The one lesson I learned, other than maybe Larry Fitzgerald, they don't have a go-to guy here. Bruce Arians will throw to the open guy. So
he's a scheme guy based on coverage. So they have routes where, you know, route concepts where, hey, if you get this coverage, which most teams do, but I think it's real prevalent there. And Palmer is a read it out quarterback. He's always been that guy. Palmer's not a, hey, I'm throwing it to Larry or I'm throwing it to him. You know, Palmer is a read it out quarterback. So he throws it based on what the coverage is.
You still think Larry Fitzgerald is moving fairly well? I thought he moved a little bit better last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a different role, but I think within the context of that offense, he'll catch balls. You know, he may not catch as many big plays, explosive plays. Maybe his touchdowns will be less. But if he plays all 16 games, I would still expect him to be, you know, a 60-plus catch guy in that offense.
San Francisco 49ers, and I was of the opinion for most of the offseason that they're not going to be a train wreck. It's going to be decent. Everyone's overreacting.
Not.
But still, Greg, when Anthony Davis retired, I was like, all right, that's, you know, you can only take so many negatives. So you seem to still believe that they're going to have success offensively. It's to me.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, to me, it comes down to Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde has to show us right out of the gate here. It's year two, the best he has to offer for this offense to be in decent shape.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I mean, they have to run the ball. There's no question. Again, I think they're asking Kaepernick to reinvent himself a little bit. We don't know if that can happen or not. That's a question. But I think overall, and you're thinking fantasy, but I think when you look at this roster, it's better than people probably think.
Good.
You know, I think it's easy to just write them off because the big names are gone. But, you know, Patrick Willis only played 7 or 8 games last year. Anthony Davis missed 9 or 10 games last year. So, you know, they've played without these guys. You know, they're a wait-and-see proposition, but they're by no means a train wreck. And you know, one thing that I'm a big believer in, you know this, John, and this is not a fantasy point, but I'm a big believer in coaching. And they have 11 guys on their staff who've been either head coaches or coordinators in the NFL or in major college football. And that was really important to Jim Tomsula. So their staff, I think, is really, really good. Now, you know, if you believe in coaching, and I do, then that's an important factor. Like we said with a number of teams, I think we said this with Jacksonville, it comes down to the quarterback. You know, Colin Kaepernick will have to play better than he did last year. And he's only been a full-time starter for 2 years. So he's still a relatively young and inexperienced quarterback, and this is a crossroads year. This is an important year for Colin Kaepernick.
And Vernon Davis this week basically said some of his problems were play calling. And, you know, maybe that's unfair, but the dude did not get the ball last year. And I know he was banged up and all that.
And they're making a conscious effort to get him, to make him a major part of this offense. Now that Jeep Crisp, who was the quarterback coach, now he's the offensive coordinator, and they're making a concerted effort to make Vernon Davis a major part of their offense.
Absolutely, and a little bit of an edict, if you will, has been handed down. Get Vernon the damn ball. It's a contract year for him, and if he's still moving well, look, this is a guy who caught 13 touchdowns in 2013, so he can be a staple of this offense. So, yeah, I'd almost kind of pair the two together. Obviously, Kaepernick's development or lack thereof is a big part of this. But if Vernon can return to form and Hyde shows us the best he has to offer, yes, I think that they will be okay. Because Anquan Boldin is going to catch 80 balls again, Greg. You know, Torrey Smith's going to catch 46 balls. You know, he'll average 20 yards a catch. Torrey Smith will catch 46 balls. Anquan Boldin's going to catch 80.
Anquan Boldin, you know, only 50. This blew me away. Anquan Boldin, only 15 players in NFL history have caught more balls than Anquan Boldin.
Yeah.
I mean, that's remarkable.
Yeah. That is remarkable. St. Louis Rams, I don't really have much to go on here. Obviously, it all comes down to the health of Todd Gurley, so it's kind of a moot point. But I will say this. I kind of like the potential of a run-based offense with Nick Foles pulling the trigger on some downfield throws when the opportunities are there to those two big receivers on the outside. But again, it all comes down to protection in the offensive line here, Greg.
Well, the nice thing is if Gurley's not ready, they still have Trey Mason. And Trey Mason is, in my view, can be a feature back in this league as well. So it's not as if they don't have a back who can be effective if Gurley's not truly ready till, let's say, week three or week four.
Seattle, again, not too much to say, but I'll throw the name out one more time. Christian Michael, this will be a good year for him, good summer, because I don't know if Robert Turbin is going to do much coming off that hip surgery, and we're not going to likely see much of Marshawn Lynch. Christian Michael, any thoughts? I mean, have we forgotten about this guy? Have we written him off? Because, you know, by the eyeball test, Greg, he's incredibly impressive, and you're hard-pressed to find a guy with a better combination of speed, movement, and power.
Well, again, now you're dealing with the other things that go with it. Very talented runner in terms of skill set, but, you know, Marshawn Lynch is a horse, you know, mentality-wise. That's what you don't know about Christian Michael. You know, look, Marshawn's still there, so Marshawn's carrying the ball. You know, we don't know what Christian Michael's role is going to be. See, the thing about Turbin is Turbin's a good receiver. I don't know if Michael's that guy. You know, I don't know if Michael comes in. You know, we don't know the answer to that. They're probably working on that with him, but you know, I don't know. He's not a receiver. Turbin's a good receiver.
Well, I think Turbin's definitely a good receiver. I think Michael's could be a lot of upside in the passing attack, but he is raw still, no question about it. That's going to wrap it up. Great stuff here, Greg. As always, we appreciate the information, and we just kind of wrapped up the off season. So we'll break for about a month or so, and then late July, probably early August, we'll reconvene and we'll do these weekly to kind of go around the league. So enjoy the summer, Greg.
John, I appreciate it. I'm going to try to, and we'll talk soon.
That's our guy, Greg Cosell. I'm John Hansen. We'll talk to you next time at fantasyguru.com.